You're listening to The Record on KUOW. I'm David Hyde.
This month we're hearing stories about things we consume. All right, David, let's see if you can guess this one. Maybe you can. It'll be tough. It's black. It's usually served hot, and people in Seattle consume more of it than in any other American city.
Oh, this is easy. It's grilled licorice.
That's right. It is grilled licorice, one of the fine things that we serve in this town. You can get them in some of the finest stores and restaurants around. No, it's coffee. And Mark Pendergrast followed coffee all the way to its roots. And what he found is that coffee and the places where we drink coffee fulfill a human need.
Every culture needs a place that's not work, not home, to get together and socialize.
Yeah, they do. So he wrote a book about coffee and coffee houses. It's called Uncommon Grounds. According to Mark, legend has it that coffee was discovered by a goat herder named Kaldi.
Kaldi was a goat herd on the mountains of Ethiopia, and he noticed his goats acting really weird and dancing around on their hind legs and basically being joyful and acting like they were drugged up. And it turns out they were, because they were eating the coffee cherries and the coffee leaves, and they were having a good time on caffeine.
So that's way back in coffee's history. Let's go forward to the first coffee house. Where and when was that?
We're not sure where the very first one was. We know that there was one by at least 1511 in Mecca, because the governor closed it down that year. They were having too good of a time making up seditious verses about him. He was the first of many leaders who thought that coffee made people too rebellious, and tried to close them down, and none of them ever worked.
Well, we know coffee kind of hypes us up. Do you think that had something to do with what people were doing in the first coffee houses?
Yes. Coffee makes you very talkative and very thoughtful in general, and somewhat irreverent. So the first coffee houses were, and they're egalitarian places in general where people can come from all walks of life. In England, in 1675, King Charles II tried to close the coffee houses down there because people were doing the same thing.
Really?
Making up nasty verses about him. Really? You know, they had lopped his father's head off, and the same thing might have happened to him if he'd taken away everybody's coffee. And now the British are primarily tea drinkers, although coffee's made a big comeback. And there were about 2,000 coffee houses in London alone by 1700. It was amazing. They called them penny universities because you could get a cup of coffee for a penny and sit and have these wonderful intellectual conversations.
What role did coffee have in the American and French revolutions?
Well, coffee had a big role, although, you know, in America, they also served beer. But the French Revolution also was planned in coffee houses, which was ironic because the French also were enslaving Africans who they had brought over to San Domingo, what we now know as Haiti. And that's where most of their coffee that was fueling their revolutionary thought came from.
What role did coffee houses have in the New America?
Well, they were popular, but not all that popular until the Boston Tea Party, when the rebellious colonists threw a bunch of tea overboard because they didn't want to pay the tax over it. And from then on, it became a patriotic duty to avoid tea and to drink coffee. It didn't hurt that coffee is also cheaper than tea because it came at that point from closer by. They were beginning to grow it in the Caribbean and then in Central America and in Brazil.
Mark Pendergrast is telling us about his history of coffee. It's called Uncommon Grounds. You say that coffee and cafes really launched the modern world. Why?
Well, in many ways, it sobered the modern world up. Until then, people drank a whole lot of alcoholic beverages, starting with beer soup in the morning and progressing through the day. So one could argue that the Industrial Revolution and a lot of what the modern world, science, music, literature, business, a lot of those began in coffee houses. Lloyd's of London began in a coffee house. Bach and Beethoven created a lot of their compositions over coffee. So I think it really arguably had a big impact. And as we've already talked about, the fact that a lot of revolutions began in coffee houses. So they really had a major impact on the Western way of life.
Mark, you're talking to us here in Seattle, and we like to think of ourselves as a coffee central in the world. Of course, Starbucks is located here. What role did Seattle and the Pacific Northwest play in that culture?
Well, you have to go back to 1966 when Pete's Tea and Coffee opened in Berkeley, California. And that inspired a lot of people, including three guys who were from Seattle. And they started Starbucks as a consequence in 1971. Starbucks and a lot of other companies deserve a huge amount of credit for the specialty coffee revolution, for getting people to rediscover the joys of good coffee, because up until then, the canned coffee folks had basically turned a fairly mediocre product that you get when you can coffee, because you have to stale it before you put it in there, into a really dreadful product. So when I was growing up, I'm a baby boomer, I thought coffee was terrible. And it was only when I was writing this history and people kept giving me really good coffee that I discovered that it was like wine.
Besides rehabilitating the flavor and the taste of coffee, Starbucks arguably recreated coffee culture. It's been discussed frequently as the third place where people can meet. But when I think back of what you were just saying about revolutions and dissent being plotted in coffee houses, going back to ancient times in Mecca and then forward to the French Revolution and the American Revolution, you go into a coffee house today and everybody's got their earphones on and they're not really paying attention to one another very much. What do you think coffee houses in the future are going to be like?
It's a good question. I mean, coffee houses, I said in my book, they provide a place for people to be alone together. There's a certain comfort level in being in the same room, but you're right. A lot of the time, there's not that much interaction. And I think that, you know, it was Howard Schultz who got hold of this idea of the third place. There was a book by a sociologist named Ray Oldenburg called The Great Good Place, and he was hypothesizing that every culture needs a place that's not work, not home, to get together and socialize, and not a bar where you're just getting, you know, loaded. And I think that it's been a very, very important thing for our culture and is an important thing because we don't get together enough. You mentioned the internet. We interact through Facebook or Twitter or any number of other social media, but we're not, in fact, very social in person a lot of the time. And I think coffee houses provide a place where we do at least see one another and hopefully talk with one another.
Do you think there will be another revolution planned in a coffee house?
It could very well be. It depends on if they take their earplugs out and unplug themselves from their iPods and begin to talk about it. But sure, if people need to get together to think about problems, a coffee house is the right place to do it.
That's Mark Pendergrass speaking to our colleague Ross Reynolds about his book, Uncommon Grounds, The History of Coffee and How It Transformed Our World. We took a quick survey to try and see how many coffee houses there are in Seattle. One estimate put it at 35 shops per 100,000 residents. So the next time you're visiting a coffee shop, talk to someone, maybe even plan a revolution.
I love coffee. I love tea. I love the Java Jive and it loves me. Coffee and tea and the Java and me.
You're listening to The Record on KUOW with Steve Scherr. I'm David Hyde.